So Steve's lesson this morning is going to dovetail perfectly with what we're talking about tonight. This morning we talked about how wonderful and desirous it is to go to heaven, to be in the kingdom of heaven, to be with God in heaven, as opposed to the trials and struggles and pains we deal with on earth. There's none of that in heaven. What we will go into tonight is who goes to heaven, who enters the kingdom of heaven, who inherits the kingdom of heaven, who is rewarded with heaven and the kingdom of heaven. To start, let's go to Matthew 13. We're going to spend pretty much the whole time in Matthew. We're going to hear, I told Rocky this is going to kind of be a red letter lesson. Some Bibles have Jesus's words in red. I love to hear everything from the Bible. There's a special note when it's from Christ, from his mouth to an audience. So Matthew 13. I got it right here. Verse 1. That day Jesus went out of the house and was sitting by the sea. This is going to be when Jesus is, I believe he's around Galilee. And large crowds gathered to him. So he got into a boat and sat down, and the whole crowd was standing on the beach. And he spoke many things to them in parables. Jesus speaks to audiences, oftentimes using parables. He uses attention getters. He uses kind of poetic language when he speaks. In this instance, he's going to speak with several parables in this sermon he gives. And several of these parables are with reference to the kingdom of heaven. The parable I want to read is the one about the tares among wheat. And that's in verse 24, Matthew 13, 24. Matthew 13, 24. Jesus presented another parable to them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went away. But when the wheat sprouted and bore grain, then the tares became evident also. The slaves of the landowner came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?' And he said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' The slave said to him, 'Do you want us then to go and gather them up?' But he said, 'No, for while you are gathering up the tares, you may uproot the wheat with them. Allow both to grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather up the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them up, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Fortunately, this is one of the parables where Christ identifies all the main features of the parable, and he does that to his disciples in starting in verse 36. Matthew 13, 36. "Then he left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples came to him and said, 'Explain to us the parable of the tares of the field.' And he said, 'The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man, and the field is the world. And as for the good seed, these are the sons of the kingdom.'" Just a break. When I read the Bible, buzzwords come out to me. Words that like stand out, or phrases that stand out to me that are used in other passages. That buzz phrase, sons of the kingdom, we'll be seeing that in a few of our other passages we'll read tonight. So just remember, the good seed, these are the sons of the kingdom. All right, back in verse 38. "And the tares are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil, and the harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. So just as the tares are gathered up and burned with fire, so shall it be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send forth his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all stumbling blocks and those who commit lawlessness." Lawlessness is going to be another buzzword for tonight. and will throw them into the furnace of fire. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear. So this is a picture of Judgment Day, the separation of the tares from the wheat. The tares are the sons of the evil one. The wheat are the sons of the kingdom. They're the good seed. Jesus, in this case, he's referencing the idea of hell and fire and torment and burnt and judgment day. He does that often in his lessons. Something we may not be hearing much from your common religious ideas in the world is much on this idea of hell and fire and separation. But Jesus teaches on that a lot. It's certainly an attention getter, but it's the truth, and that's what's coming. So question, just make sure everyone's following. Who is burnt in this story? The sons of the evil one. And what did they practice? Lawlessness. Who shines in the kingdom? Sons of the kingdom. And they're good seed. Which one do you want to be? How do you know if you're one or the other? We want to go to heaven, but how do you know if you're on track? How do you know if you're keeping what the good seed do, what the righteous do? Well, let's listen to Jesus explaining that. He spends a lot of his time in his teaching. We're faithful Christians, us here. We're followers of Christ. We believe in him. What did he say about how to live for him, how to be good? Let's go to another one of his sermons. Matthew 5, the Sermon on the Mount. Let's go to Matthew 5. Matthew 5, starting in verse 1. So, Jesus again, as far as I understand, he's around Galilee, he's far north of Judea, and crowds are gathering around him. And they want to hear what he has to say. And so do we want to hear what he has to say. So, verse 1, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountain. And after he sat down, his disciples came to him. He opened his mouth and began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the gentle, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So we've just heard Jesus describe the attitudes, the character of people whose kingdom is the kingdom of heaven. What were some of those characteristics? You can just say them. I'm making sure everybody's tracking along. You can just say what we read. What are their characteristics, their attributes of these people who have the kingdom of heaven?
Humility.
Poor in spirit. Thank you. And I'm glad you pointed that out. Poor in spirit, in contrast to haughty or arrogant in spirit, proud or rich in their spirit.
Pure.
Pure in heart. And that's another one I want to point out. We're going to read more in the Sermon on the Mount, where we see these attitudes either demonstrated or rejected by those who are either inheriting the kingdom or not receiving the kingdom. All right, pure in heart. Let's say them all. Hunger and thirst for righteousness. Thank you. Mourn for sin.
Merciful.
Soon it's going to be, which ones have we left out? And everybody's keeping track to know what they are.
Peacemakers.
And they're called sons of God. And remember what we read in that parable. These would be sons of the kingdom of their father. Hunger and thirst. Did we say gentle? Gentle, merciful, those who have been persecuted. Brothers and sisters, these are the attributes we must have within our character. These are the characteristics of the sons of God, of Christians who follow what Christ taught. And what's reassuring is that those who are poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Those who have been persecuted for righteousness, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. They'll see God. They'll be called sons of God. They will receive mercy. They will be satisfied and inherit the earth. They will be comforted. Those who have these characteristics. Ask yourself, are these characteristics yours? Do you self-examine and see, am I being gentle? Am I being humble? Am I being merciful? Am I willing to endure persecution? Do I seek to make peace? This is part of how we self-examine and we compare ourselves to what Christ taught, and we can be honest with ourselves. Are we following his teaching or not? Okay. So let's keep going in the Sermon on the Mount. Let's go to verse 17. Do not think I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law until all is accomplished. Whoever then annuls or breaks one of the least of these commandments, and teaches others to do the same, shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. We're having the same contrast, right? We started with a contrast between the tares and the good seed. We've had a description of what the character is of those who will be called sons of God, whose theirs is the kingdom of heaven. But now we have this idea of someone who annuls or breaks the least of the commandments and teaches others to do the same. Those shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Who could those people be? Well, he follows right up with that in verse 20. For I say to you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. If I was in this audience that is with Christ at this time, I would immediately start thinking, what do I know about the Pharisees and the scribes? What kind of behavior, what are their attitudes, what have I observed about them? Well, Jesus knows a lot about the scribes and the Pharisees. And he lays into them pretty hard in Matthew 23. Let's go to Matthew chapter 23. He's going to explain what is this unrighteousness they have. What are the attitudes of the scribes and the Pharisees that if we espouse them, we will not enter into the kingdom of heaven? Let's learn about how the Pharisees were. Everybody at Matthew 23. This is going to be quite a bit of a reading. Then Jesus spoke to the crowds and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees have seated themselves in the chair of Moses. Therefore, all that they tell you, do and observe, but do not do according to their deeds. for they say things and do not do them. We're about to read a list of things that the Pharisees are busy doing that we need to be avoiding. All right. Verse 4. They tie up heavy burdens and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are unwilling to move them with so much as a finger. But they do all their deeds to be noticed by men. For they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen their tassels of their garments. They love the place of honor at banquets and the chief seats in the synagogues and respectful greetings in the marketplaces and being called rabbi by men. But do not be called rabbi, for one is your teacher and you are all brothers. Do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your father, he who is in heaven. Do not be called leaders, for one is your leader, that is Christ. But the greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. So we see him contrasting. The Pharisees and the scribes are not humble. They seek to be praised, recognized, respected. They do things for the purpose of being acknowledged by others. This is our just time as we're brothers and sisters. We're encouraging each other. We're sharing in this same idea. We're Christians. When we examine ourselves, are we doing things that are like what the Pharisees and scribes do? We seek to be acknowledged by men as being righteous. We have our own self-righteousness, our pride, and our self-interest. Let's not have that. Let's keep going in this description about the scribes and Pharisees. Verse 13. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut off the kingdom of heaven from people. For you do not enter in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense you make long prayers. Therefore, you will receive greater condemnation. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you travel around on sea and land to make one proselyte. And when he becomes one, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint, dill, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Just a side note, that extreme, that hyperbole, straining out a gnat, eating a camel, it reminds me of the speck in our eye versus the plank in our brother's. That's another method that Jesus uses. He uses those ways of teaching and speaking to get people's attention and remember it. And I hope we can remember that, this very vivid imagery of straining out a gnat and then swallowing a camel. The idea that we will focus on something so close in the Word and then neglect some other things so core important. All right, verse 25. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside they are full of robbery and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and of the dish, so that the outside of it may become clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but on the inside they are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. So you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous and say, if we had been living in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. So you testify against yourselves that you are sons of those who murder the prophets. Fill up, then, the measure of the guilt of your fathers, you serpents, you brood of vipers. How will you escape the sentence of hell? The attitudes the Pharisees and the scribes had, do those sound like the wheat or the tares? The tares. What were some of those attitudes? If y'all still have the passages in front of you, he's calling them out on a lot of their attitudes and their actions. What were some of those that they had that we can associate with those who will not inherit the kingdom? Right.
Did it for
show. Self-interest, self-indulgence. Mm-hmm. They were not humble. They did not seek the lower position. They were seeking to be exalted. They were hypocrites. They were fakes. They wanted to look like they were doing righteousness, but in reality they had malicious or selfish or sinful intent. They were full of robbery. They neglected justice. They neglected mercy. They neglected faithfulness. This idea that they would devour widows' houses, willing to abuse people, take advantage of people. They weren't sincere in their prayers. They made their prayers. They were seeming like they were acting like they were trying to be faithful people. But it was for pretense. It was pretending. It was hypocrisy. Okay, so we were talking about what Jesus said, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees. Here Jesus goes in depth on what the righteousness, or lack thereof, that the scribes and Pharisees had. And so we look at several examples of those. And I'm sure as y'all read, and I know as I read this, I consider myself, I see is there areas where I am neglecting any of these things that are neglecting the things that are important, or do I have any of these characteristics of the scribes and Pharisees in me and I need to remove them from me? Let's go back to the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Was this a sermon of love?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that some scribes, Pharisees heard this and were cut to their heart. I know you just think about the idea of coming to your senses and being cut to the heart. Some probably would gnash their teeth. Some could come to their senses. But it's the truth either way. So truth is loving, whether it be hard to hear or whether it be good news if it's something good. Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that. The message that Christ is teaching does not support the respect that the Pharisees and the scribes were going to be getting. It's the opposite. It's the servants. It's the lowest. It's the most humble who are worthy of being, you know, in the kingdom. So thank you for mentioning that. That would be why they would not want Christ to continue teaching, because it was going to undermine their power. Okay, so we're back in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6. Matthew 6, verse 1. And this is the same idea. Matthew 6, verse 1. Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be honored by men. Truly I say to you, they have the reward in full. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Remember that verse, left hand know what your right hand is doing. We're going to eventually get to Matthew 5, and I think that, or Matthew 25. When they say, when did we give to you? When do we, you know, do all these things that Christ credits to them as righteous deeds? I think this relates to that. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right is doing, so that your giving will be in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. When you pray, you are not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners, so that they may be seen by men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you pray, go into your inner room, close your door, and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So what is connected with the idea of being rewarded?
Humility.
Humility, thank you. Humility instead of seeking to be praised, seeking to be acknowledged. And who was busy doing that? Seeking to be praised, seeking his respect. Scribes and Pharisees. Okay, so we're just like one of the first of the Beatitudes, poor in spirit, being humble. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Remember this morning we talked about we want to go to heaven. We're reading about what are the characteristics, the attitudes, the actions of people who receive the kingdom of God, receive the kingdom of heaven, enter the kingdom of heaven. And what are the attitudes and attributes of people who do not? Okay. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to see the attitudes and attributes of those who will not inherit the kingdom or will suffer punishment, and the attitudes and attributes of those who will receive the kingdom. Let's read Matthew 5. We'll read quite a few of the rest of Matthew 5. Matthew 5:21. You have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. Make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid up the last cent. This section here that we just read, with reference to having anger, calling people names, your attitudes towards your brother. Remember back to what we read, the Beatitudes. What Beatitudes are relevant to this story, to this situation?
Peacemaker.
Peacemaker? Thank you.
Gentle and merciful.
Gentle and merciful. Good. I'd say humble too. This idea of being the peacemaker and merciful and gentle, this would be the one who leaves his altar or leaves his offering at the altar and goes to reconcile with his brother. It's reflecting the attitude of one who is a son of God. And then at the start, the one who says, you good for nothing, you fool, reflects one who lacks the merciful attitude, the humble attitude, the peacemaking attitude. All right, let's keep going. Verse 27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. How many times is Jesus using that phrase, fire, hell, being cast out, will not enter the kingdom, will not receive the kingdom? If your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you, for it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Let's try that same exercise. What were some of the attributes, the Beatitudes, that are relevant to this story? Or this case he's bringing up, this issue?
Pure in heart.
Thank you, pure. I think at least pure. Let me pull them back up. Pure, humble. Hunger and thirst for righteousness, I thought. Obviously, immorality is unrighteous. Adultery is going to be unrighteous. If you're hungering and thirsting and needing and wanting and seeking to be righteous and know more and be more about righteousness, where is there going to be room for you to be open to adultery and lust? Yes?
In this section here, I've kind of throw this out for people's consideration. You know, there's a big contrast between the attitudes of the citizens of the kingdom versus the Pharisees and the scribes. So each of these sections, when we read, you've heard, like verse 21, you've heard what the angels were told. Where did they hear that from?
Pharisees
and scribes.
Right.
It's something, you know, if they go and preach or do not commit a murder, that's pretty important. But evidently, you know, that commandment, not murder, is based on love your neighbor. So they would teach that, but yet how would they, very likely they would treat people in a very unloving manner and condemn them. And I think in each of these sections, you've got to look at the Pharisees and scribes. We're doing something, if we're not right, we have to exceed that righteousness.
Exactly.
So at the beginning of the section, there's one truth. Evidently, they were changing it, or their attitude, or their wrong attitudes, and they weren't really fulfilling the letter of the law. And so, I think keep that in perspective as we look at these sections. But look at that versus what we should be.
It doesn't sound like the Pharisees and scribes were teaching or exemplifying these attitudes. They might say that first verse, or that first phrase, you shall not commit murder. But we know Jesus accused them of not showing mercy, of not showing justice, of those things that they were neglected, what we just read about, the woes, that woe unto the Pharisees for those for what they had been neglecting, justice, mercy, faithfulness. And so, yeah, I think what Jesus is pointing out is that the heart issues, the Pharisees were not exemplifying. And maybe they were saying even some of this, but they weren't exemplifying it. Because Jesus does say, do what they say, but don't do what they do. And also, this section immediately follows when he says, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And then he begins this, listing these things that they've heard from the ancients. And then taking it to a step further, it's about what's going on in the heart. Okay, let's keep going. Verse 31. It was said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. Certainly something that you'd expect a Pharisee or scribe to be familiar with. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except for the reason of unchastity, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. What is wrong with the attitude of someone who divorces their wife except for unchastity? What's wrong with that attitude? What are they lacking of the Beatitudes? Hunger and thirst after righteousness? Forgiveness, good. Mercy, gentleness. I think of some of the other like fruits of the Spirit, patience, long suffering.
Pure in heart. They were not pure in heart. They were looking burnt out.
Thank you. Where is the servant attitude? Where's the servant and faithful attitude towards the spouse by one who is willing to divorce her for, you know, the birth, the dinner thing, or she's gotten old thing? Where is the love and commitment there? So Christ is striking at the heart. All right, let's keep going. Verse 33. Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond this is of evil. Apparently it was a custom back then that people could make promises to do something or borrow something and then say, I promise by the temple or the gold of the temple. And that was supposed to give more trustworthiness to what they said compared to if they didn't make that promise. So it like puts on a balance. There are degrees of honesty they can have or trustworthiness. Christ nixes that idea. It's just you are honest and truthful and faithful to what you say. There's no need to qualify it with oaths. Someone who's needing, you probably heard the someone will say, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to tell you the truth. You might hear that come up in conversation. I don't know if this is true, but I feel like when I hear that from someone, it puts up a red flag for me. Like, you needed to qualify that you were going to tell me the truth now? It's like, we should always just be truthful. We don't need to qualify, like, this is the truth, but maybe if I didn't say it's not the truth, it might not be the truth. So we do those things to try to tell the truth and be honest because we care about who we're speaking with. We want to reflect the truth and share the truth. And we're not if you're willing to share information that isn't true, why would you do that? It's for some selfish motive. And so we need to be honest with ourselves and check to ourselves that we're not having selfish motives for why we might be willing to share error. Okay. Verse 38. You've heard it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. I think the next one is kind of connected. If you have heard, it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he who causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even Gentiles do the same? Therefore you are to be perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect. In this section I see a lot of responses or opportunity to do a tit for tat retaliation, and it looks like that was part of what was their custom back then. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That's from the old law. Oh, I'm sorry. I think it's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. He contrasts that with the person who has the attitude described in the Beatitudes. Merciful, gentle, willing to endure persecution, humble. Those are the attitudes that he's trying to call people up to have. And then this idea that's so difficult. And this is why I think it's really good for us to read these verses and have these verses fresh. Maybe you keep them fresh. Maybe you think about them every day. But it's really good for us to do this in the presence of each other. It's very likely someone is going to violate us, frustrate us, persecute us, insult us soon. In your life, that's probably going to happen some point soon. Having this verse, having Jesus' teaching on the forefront of your mind, those Beatitudes, those things that are called the attributes of the sons of God, those are yours. So you don't respond with this tit for tat, this retaliatory, I'm going to get mine, don't disrespect me attitude. Instead, you're looking to be there. You're willing to go an extra mile. You're willing to take the hit. You're willing to endure and receive persecution for the sake of righteousness, for the sake of that person. Can you think of anybody who endured and exemplified these two scenarios?
David is a man after God's own heart, and from the standpoint of nobody's perfect, you see that David lived a life that was, he was a servant, he had a servant's heart, he did things that were wrong, and so we have an understanding that we are human, but he was willing to repent. And then you look at Saul, who was selfish and self-serving, and I think I did carry out the commands of the Lord, I did what you told me to do, that's what the Pharisees are, but no, it was for show, it was for your own selfishness. And, you know, the attitude that David had, you know, specifically what you've been talking about, he didn't tit for tat. He could have killed Saul, wouldn't have been the right thing to do, but he would tell this man that he was God's anointed. Not exactly the same thing, but the attitude here, you know, the idea that David, and you think about what he had on his plate, that being the anointed one, being a king, he embodied humility, he embodied love, he embodied being a peacemaker, doing what God would have him to do, and then Saul is parallel to the Pharisees and doing what I want to do and trying to pass off what God would have you to do.
Yeah. That David definitely demonstrated a lot of these attributes, these attitudes. That's his man after God's own heart character. I think he endured a while of suffering, running, fear, doubt, fleeing, life at risk, because he wanted to be right with God. I was thinking Jesus and the apostles. I mean, you can think of a lot of examples in the Old Testament too, but I did think of David. I talked to my brother about this, and David was another name that came up. So, you know, you may look at these like, really turn the other cheek, really give the clothes off your back, you know, just read it for what it is, and then look at the story, what Christ did and what the apostles did. They did endure beatings. Christ endured crucifixion. They were running. I mean, Paul, naked. What happened to his clothes? He was trapped. He was journeying all around most of the world. And so we see him, those men, and our Savior exemplifying this. It may sound like hyperbole, but they actually lived it. And we can live it. And we must, if we want to be called sons of God and be part of that kingdom. Okay. So finish up what I wanted to mention from the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 7:21. Not everyone who... Oh, sorry. I'll let you. Matthew 7:21. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? In your name cast out demons, in your name perform many miracles. And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. So, in this passage, who enters? Who enters the kingdom?
Does
the will of my Father. And we're reading about many examples of what it means to do the will of the Father, how to treat people, how to view yourself and your concerns about yourself, your concerns about others. So that's what doing the will of the Father does. And then we're just told these will be the ones that enter the kingdom of heaven. It's not like a mystery. You don't have to wonder that much. He lays it out for you. So in so many passages and in so many letters, the apostles have laid it out for us. Here's how you live. So I've got a couple of things I'm probably going to have to cut out. Okay, we'll go to Matthew 25. Matthew 25. So to start this chapter, Jesus tells a parable about the 10 virgins, which is somewhat similar to the passage we read, that parable about the kingdom of heaven. It gives a depiction of a final day, and those who are prepared, or a final decision moment, and those who were prepared and prudent were admitted, and those who were not prepared were not admitted. So it's in that context we go to Matthew 25, verse 14. I give you that context because he starts in verse 14. For it is just like a man. And I believe it when it says it, I think that it is the kingdom of heaven. For it is just like a man about to go on a journey. This is verse 14 in Matthew 25. It is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one also who had received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. But his master answered and said to him, You wicked, lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I did not sow, and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him, and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have in abundance. But the one who does not have, even what he does have, shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. When you hear weeping and gnashing of teeth and being thrown out, and you hear the story, and you think you could potentially be one of those 3 slaves, which one do you not want to be? The one that took the one and buried it, right? And what was he accused of being? Lazy. What were the others doing in contrast? What? Working. They were busy. They were busy doing something for their master's interest. And their master was pleased. They knew what would please their master. And so they did what they needed to do to please their master. And he was pleased. And what did he do? How did he respond to them? He rewarded them and he welcomed them into his joy. But to that lazy slave, that wicked slave, he was cast in the outer darkness. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So Jesus, you know, like I talked about, he uses these stories, this imagery to inspire people, inspire motivation, and to inspire fear. Does that phrase, "there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth," inspire fear in you? If you were in that crowd, would that inspire some fear in you? Absolutely. And you'd probably think, I do not want to be that worthless slave. Christ, so I know I interrupted and asserted some ideas, but Christ goes right on from that statement. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. And then he says, but, so he's still going. But when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another, as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For here's who the people are who get that great news, inherit the kingdom. Here they are. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? The king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. Then he will also say to those on his left, this is terrifying, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. Oh, I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they themselves also will answer, Lord, when do we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you? Then he will answer them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. These will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Okay. So we've read several passages on Christ, words from Christ, who inherits, who goes to heaven, who is welcomed into that kingdom. And who isn't? So it's up to us to be familiar with what Christ taught and follow that to the best of our ability and not neglect any of it as the scribes and Pharisees were. We read that the scribes and Pharisees, they were neglecting important things about the word and that the righteousness that they had will not inherit the kingdom. But we've read about the righteousness of those who will, the Beatitudes. our attitudes about ourselves, our humility, our attitudes towards others, even our enemy, our attitudes towards the brethren, and how we look out for them, even the least. That's what we are called to do as Christians. Steve this morning talked about how much we want to go to heaven, how great heaven will be, how precious and amazing it is there. There's no pain, there's no sickness, there's no hunger, there's no nakedness. If we want to get there, we follow God's commands with that faithful heart. That's the message. Christians, follow God's will. Have these attitudes as your own. And serve your fellow man. Serve God. Serve your neighbor. And God will welcome you into His kingdom, He promised.